We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's showtime. It's Wednesday. It's still a crazy, crazy world, getting crazier by the day. And Tom Shattuck is here, my old radio friend from Massachusetts, big-time newspaper editor now at the Lowell Sun, but still just little Tommy to me. How you doing, Shattuck?
I'm doing great. I mean, I love this week. This is just wild. This is wild.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you why, because this week, two notable civic leaders, we'll say, said things like, we need prosecutors to bring their best. We need their best people to get down here and to prosecute these hooligans. They said things like, there are caravans of criminals pouring into the city, and we can't catch up to them. And that is the language of Donald Trump, but that was said by Lori Lightfoot and Commissioner Brown of Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago. The shoe is on the other Lightfoot.
Well, I was going to go for a Gordon Lightfoot thing, but I couldn't do it in time. but just imagine that the progressive consciousness now starting to ease over just a bit into Trump land. Sounding like,
well, Wait a second. Seattle, the black woman police chief resigned because they were cutting her budget.
Exactly. And her pay, the first black woman police chief, does not get paid as much as her white predecessor, which seems antithetical to the spirit of 2020. But you're right about that. And she also said that she was helpless, that they had her, you know, she was essentially handcuffed herself. She's the one who had to tell the people in the businesses of Seattle a couple weeks ago that there's nothing they can do. Good luck. And you're right. This.
All right, so you've got this glow about you because of this development. Are you? It seems to me you might be jumping to run a victory lap a little too soon. But it does seem like the thing we expect, which is the cruelty, the contempt, the hatred, the anti-liberty nature of the things that the big government crowd is selling and has been selling for years, that this sped up acceptance of what they're selling, which is cloaked by the shroud of racism and trying mm-hmm. to get rid of racism, right? They pretend that they're anti-racism, but really it's just big government destruction that's going on, the same thing the left is always pushing. And it's maybe now starting to collide with itself. That's what you think.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Marxist woke experiment that we've been playing out here in the last few months now is collapsing in front of people, and including true believers, and they're starting to say, or some of them are starting to splinter off and say, no, I'm done, no mas, enough of this stuff. We need to return to the pre-COVID, pre-BLM, pre-unraveling period. And the only other person who's been saying that, who's been you know, only complying with Fauci, kicking and screaming, is in the White House. And so if the culture is slowly, like, penduluming back towards Donald Trump.
To reality, yeah.
Yes, that makes this presidential campaign fascinating because Kamala Harris, the Harris-Biden ticket, what ticket are they going to be? Are they going to embrace being the single best, tag team of mass incarcerationists that we've ever had on a ticket? Or are they going to, you know, bow to the woke tsunami?
Yeah, this is a wonderful way you're framing it, Tom, because if you look at Joe Biden himself, he's positioned himself as a one-term guy. He's here just to offer a bridge to the future. And what is a bridge? But a construct that has a leg stepping down on each side of the river or whatever the thing is in the center. And if you are both things, if you stand on both sides, then you don't stand on either side in the political world. And nobody on the "we want to burn down America, tear down all the statues, get rid of this racist framework that it was built on," none of them are going to be happy with Joe Biden as Joe Biden unless he's carrying a package, a Trojan horse of anti-American leftism in his vice presidential candidate. And boy, is that what Harris represents?
Well, she represents whatever the room wants her to represent at that moment. So if she's questioned by CNN as to whether or not she wants Medicaid for all and the room seems to want it, yes, she'll want it. If she feels that the room wants her to do forced gun buybacks, then she'll say yes, she wants to immediately. If she feels like the room wants her to have been a pot smoker in college, she'll say she is. If she feels like the room then wants to know what she listened to in college, she'll search for something and tell them it was Tupac and Snoop Dogg, even though they didn't, neither of them were known until years after she got out of college, before she went
in. So you're saying she'll do her job readily, and that is to represent everything Biden believes. And Biden can't believe anything because he believed all those things for 35 years that he, for the last few years or a few months, has now said he doesn't believe. And so he's both guys. And if she's going to sharpen that, if she leans more heavily on the radicalism leg, then the ticket's in trouble. And if she leans too far back into the I believe in America camp, what does that do? Does that create some kind of breakdown or division? Or is the I guess the other option is that Trump is so heinous to a large enough size of the population that they're willing to live with whatever the ticket is, and they're not even going to look.
Right. Now, to the third option, that Trump is so heinous, also heinous is the idea of the beautiful stores in Michigan Avenue being destroyed, on having to literally lift the bridges in Chicago so the caravan of criminals can't get over them. In other words, building a moat. Those are moms in Lincoln, Illinois, in different suburbs of Chicago. Those people get scared. They were scared last time around, scared into Trump's arms, a lot of them by the terrorism that was happening, which Trump.
So you're saying for mainstream American families, people, women sending their kids off to school, that the Democrats risk being too scary?
Oh, absolutely. In the ticket threatens to codify these radical political notions into laws and regulations. Mothers are saying, why can't my kids go to school? Why are you making them sit 5 feet apart? Why are you making them wear masks? Just get in there and teach like you should be. Mothers want their kids to learn. Families can't have this instability going on and on. But Democrats now, these tickets are promising that. They're promising. It's crazy, and which is why over the weekend, and this is another reason I think that Trump is beginning his march forward now. Over the weekend, Trump with the executive orders was out there and pragmatic. He did something in the right direction, and he got all sorts of hell for it because he was right on key. But I don't see what this ticket does with Harris and Trump, and also how, since he's cloistered in the basement essentially on a respirator. Do you have her go out and do the whistle stopping, so to speak, the kitchen table stuff? And if it's all her, then why do we have him? What's the point?
Mm. Well, so there's the overshadowing issue with anybody you put with him. But if you, what we're really saying about, we're talking to Tom Shattuck, senior editor at the Lowell Sun newspaper in Massachusetts. What you're really saying is she's a good politician and she's able to get away with posing as a radical, Me Too, modern, post-racial woman, or whatever the new thing is for race. I don't even know what it is now. And at the same time, not be too scary for regular folks who still want America to be America. And that's really, to pull off the Democratic game here, what you have to do is somehow satisfy the radicals who are taking the baseball bats to the storefronts of the nice neighborhoods, mm-hmm. because nice neighborhoods are the symbol of everything bad in America. So on the one hand, you have to satisfy them and satisfy mainstream voters. And that's the... that's the ticket with national politics, because you're trying to bring together such diverse blocks of voters. Isn't that all you're accusing her of, is being like every politician?
Let's go back to the very beginning of what you said. You suggested that she's good at it. I don't think she's good at it. I think she'll do it, but I think she exposes herself every time she does it. Like we talked about with the marijuana thing. You know, she won the room. She won Charlemagne the God by saying, yeah, she smoked a little pot listening to Tupac, and she laughed about it. And at the same time, remember, that's what Tulsi Gabbard stabbed her for in that debate, laughing about, you know, smoking pot as a youngster. Well, she put 1,000 or more young black men in jail in California for drug possession. So she says these things to win the moment, but they always come back to bite her. Even the thing when she...
I love this. This is like a psychological analysis of her, you're doing. It's like she wants to succeed so much in the moment. She wants the adoration of the crowd so mm-hmm. bad that she goes too far and she actually stands for something. And if you stand for something last week, then you have to stand for it again this week or people lose faith in you.
Yes. And she, when she attacked Biden about busing, because when she was a little girl, Biden tried to keep her off the bus or whatever, you know, emotional journey she took us on, you know, she later walked all that stuff back, because busing was not a good deal for white Americans or black Americans. And everybody knows the execution was awful. So she walked all that stuff back. And then she said, well, busing was just one of the tools that you can use. And she has no follow up. She has no defense. It's the truth. She has offense. She's willing to throw a rock, but then she doesn't know what to do when the rocks come back at her. And, you know, she's not always going to be able to escape those situations by appeasing a room and laughing, you know, uproariously, which is one of the things she does when things get dicey. And soon she's going to be in hour-long interviews, like with Chris Wallace and Jonathan Swan of Axios. And that's not going to work there, because they're going to play her.
Chris Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala, tell us about smoking pot with Tupac.
Right.
It'll be great.
Right.
All right. Stay with us. Tom Shattuck is here. We're talking presidential politics now that Joe Biden has picked a running mate. Did he pick the right one? And where do they go from here? Plus, the media makes it look like this election has been long finished, that Joe Biden has an easy path to victory. Let's talk about that, too, when we continue on WTIC. Yeah, it's WTIC. Old friend Tom Shattuck here from Massachusetts. We're talking presidential politics because he is a passionate observer, and we're so obsessed with Connecticut issues here, we don't do enough focus on it. But it is a moment, because Joe Biden did the thing yesterday. He made a stand. He picked someone to be his VP. And as soon as he picked Kamala Harris, it occurred to me, Tom, that he really had no choice. Like, considering he viewed himself, well, he had already committed to a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the parade of names that we saw over the last couple of weeks revealed was that there really aren't black women who have had careers that give them resumes that prepare them for the White House in the way that we expect a vice president to be prepared. And where else was he going to turn?
Well, First of all, I mean, there may not be. I mean, I would think I would take what's it, Condi Rice actually in a moment if he wants to pick her. I'd be on board for that. But
yes, but she, you're talking about the Democrat equivalent, but to Condi, right? The one who the Obama's national security advisor.
Susan Rice.
Yeah, but Susan Rice is not hasn't won elective office,
and you can't I understand.
So that's exactly the box he was in. Like, who does he turn to? He needs somebody who's got the credibility, because everyone's looking at Joe Biden as a temporary placeholder.
Right, and you know, he never pledged to pick a black woman. Society in woke Twitter told him he had to, and so his campaign. And that's
that wasn't a statement from him.
No, he said he'd pick a woman. And then the George Floyd stuff came, and then he had to pick a black woman. So it's very interesting. So he, you know, there was no, it does tell you though that his campaign is bullied, which tells you that maybe there are going to be more of the woke ticket. But it is interesting in the total spirit of fighting racism. Isn't it interesting that it was made clear, really now for weeks, it's been made clear that a black woman and only a black woman, in the name of racism, only a black woman can be his VP. Now, if you're the most qualified Asian woman or Latina,
forget about you, baby.
It's not your time. Those races, no. For them, there still is systemic racism, because the system is saying that you're disqualified. But for Kamala Harris, she just happened to be the right race this time, so the systemic racism is working on her behalf. It's just an odd thing to look how far we've come in 2020. But I thought.
This was a conscious decision Democrats took a long time ago to walk away from. As much as they like to play the single Martin Luther King quote in a loop, imagining a society in which people don't notice each other's skin color, they went immediately from that into obsessing over skin color and using it as some kind of entry card to get into the building.
But isn't that something, a more dishonorable way to be the first at something, that a bunch of white men, you know, starting with Chris Dodd, decide, make it in a smoke-filled room, decide to pick the first black woman? Like, what an inglorious way for the ascension.
It is, but on the other hand, I think it is fair to say the system is so rigged. Insiders are so committed to keeping their own kind. And I'm not talking about race or any kind in particular, but whatever kind it is, whoever's got power. Like, once the blacks, for example, or Hispanics or whomever, whatever the subset of the culture is, get some kind of permanent hold on the White House, then it will become glorious to elect somebody else. And that there's this desire to jump us forward and to do affirmative action hiring, in essence, because the society is just stuck and unable to change. And therefore, let's do an artificial change. And if you're not for artificial change, if you're not for forcing it now, then you're not for us. Because what we can see from your corrupt racist societies, there's no other way we get there. And it's just a funny argument a few years after Barack Obama left office, that's all.
Right, but I think the iconic celebration of these milestones is only is something that only happens if there's a good progressive at the center of the celebration. So if Peter Thiel becomes president in 2024, that will not be celebrated as a milestone for gay men or homosexuals at all, because he's Peter Thiel and he's an evil Republican. And so it
yes,
matters.
But that's the way. That's the way you could say the parties are equal in both being clubhouses. And while the Democrats pretend to care about race or pretend to care about gays or whatever it is, all they care about is power. And so if gays or race are winning the other party power, then they're not going to celebrate that, because they live for power. Both parties are in the power business, right?
It's horribly cynical and realistic at the same time, Todd. There's no doubt about that.
Well, that's what they do. They're these interlopers who stand between us and our government. I hate the parties now. I hate both of them. I am a Republican as much as I can be one, because there's nothing else to be. I can't be for the party that's for dismantling America. And Republicans are less for dismantling America by a long shot than Democrats are. That's how I look at it. And that's
I'm
how
right
I
there
live
with you.
It. But okay, good. All right, we're going to pause for news. Tom Shattuck is here from the Lowell Sun newspaper, where he is senior editor. We will continue the conversation after news on WTIC. Okay. Wednesday afternoon, Thomas Shattuck, senior editor at the Lowell Sun newspaper. He is our guest. We're talking national politics. Well, because there's a big national story, Kamala Harris, vice presidential choice. And I put some thoughts into your head, Tom, and I'd like to hear what they managed to dig out of your psyche. I don't want you to feel narrowed down. Go wherever you want to go.
So, like we said earlier, that she's able to, or she wants to conform to her surroundings. And she does this on any setting where she is. She'll do it in the debates. She'll do it on the radio shows.
And she's a chameleon.
She's a chameleon, you know, in the moment. But then, unfortunately, she, you know, reanimates as a human being who's held accountable, and she's got no answers for anything. So when she says things like, you know, she wants to get rid of private health insurance to own the room,
yeah.
Then she's, you know, they question her about it again, and she says when she says get rid of private health insurance, she means bolster Obamacare, and then have an all of the above approach to health insurance, and she'll flail like in the debates with Tulsi Gabbard, when Tulsi Gabbard essentially put her on the ropes and said that you've put young black men in jail, and you know, you're an authoritarian in California. Harris had nothing to say, but when I was there, I was an attorney general, and we did the hard work. In the systems that we had, we did the hard work, and I was there doing the really hard work. It's easy for you to be in the House of Representatives and make speeches all day, but in California, we did the hard work. And she had no answer. She had nothing ready to avoid the hit, which is a hit that people have been, you know, using on her now for at least 5 or 6 years. But she's got no answers to these things. Somebody is going to at some point sit her down and say, "You have made it clear that you think Joe Biden is a segregationist who learned from the worst of the worst of the racists in Congress in the 1970s. And you said that kind of thing not only hurt you personally, but put back the civil rights movement for years and years. You've also said, they'll say to Kamala Harris, that Brett Kavanaugh, the accusations from 35 years ago were so important to prohibit him from being in a position of power. Now,
I hope you get to do the interview. This is good. What does she say?
Well, what can she say when they say that? Other than I changed my mind?
No, she'll do the standard bob and weave and say, I think Joe's provided some good answers for that. I made my accusations. He made some comebacks. I'm comfortable with what he had to say, but that's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today, you know what politicians do.
Well, I understand
that. The bob and weave.
It's a bad look. If it's not done well, it's a bad look, and she can't do it well. There's no way she can get it. She'll laugh. She'll probably joke. She'll come up with a new hybrid answer. But somebody like Jonathan Swan's going to hold her to it and say, no, the woman claims that she was, you know, digitally sexually assaulted by Joe Biden in detail. Jonathan Swan could read the details to her and say, you said before that you believe her. Do you believe her now? And when she says, well, I believe that women, Jonathan Swan can say yes or no. Do you believe her? Yes or no? Yes or no, yes or no. And eventually, if she doesn't say yes or no, he can say, I guess we're not going to get a question. We're not going to get an answer to that question. And
All right, so, but what you're painting is, again, standard politics. Okay, you're saying she's worse than most because she lacks a weather vane for where the line is that you can't step over. And she steps over the line and makes her rhetoric hard to undo. But that would be hard if she were a Republican, I would think, and had the whole media machinery stacked up against her, so that when one interview caught her in a difficult moment, it would be amplified by all the other media running around pointing fingers and laughing at her. But because she's a Democrat, she gets a pass on the media coverage of these issues. And most reporters won't bring them up. They'll talk about things like getting her reaction to the latest protest in Chicago.
So there's a lot of truth to what you said. And you could already see it foreshadowed over the weekend by Valerie Jarrett's letter to all Valerie Jarrett and a bunch of other
there were like 100 people signed it or something.
Yes,
right?
And they put people like you and me, and but mostly complicit lefties, on notice that women were to be exempted from certain questions. She said, questions of electability of a woman in itself is a perpetuation of a stereotype. So you're not allowed to ask her about her electability because that's a perpetuation of a stereotype. There are literally bullet points that she sent to newsrooms. And you don't think that this thing is already, you know, up on the wall in stone tablets in the New York Times editorial offices? Absolutely it is. Valerie Jarrett says, reporting on the heritage of black women or women of color perpetuates a misunderstanding about who is legitimately American. Can't talk about anybody's heritage now. That is gone. You know, it's reporting even as asides in a story on a woman's looks, weight, tone of voice, attractiveness, and hair is sexist news coverage, unless the same analysis is applied to every candidate. Has anybody ever talked about Donald Trump's orange hue or his seemingly unnatural hair? I think it's done.
No, of course not. That would be totally unfair and bigoted of them.
Right, right. Reporting on and using pictures of a woman's, particularly black women, show of anger at injustice or any other kind of passion in communication perpetuates racist tropes. So there you go. Every picture of Kamala Harris better be a pleasant, doting, smelling a flower.
Smiley, happy.
Exactly. Because nobody ever uses angry pictures of Trump in front of Mount Rushmore giving dark speeches, No, right? I mean, this is crazy.
But you're sounding like an aggrieved Trump voter who can't live in the moment we're in. And my fear for your aggrievement is that you're not in the right emotional place. Mm-hmm. The emotional space you want to be filling in the role that we're in is to see what's actually going on and what's actually going to happen, not to see what one particular viewpoint is choosing for its result.
I am not.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I am offering a piece of hard evidence here by some Democratic women activists framing the argument, putting newsrooms on notice, and a lot of newsrooms will listen. But there is a good side, and this will take me away from being aggrieved. The good side is that there are some journalists out there, including Jonathan Swan, including Chris Wallace, and a select few others, who will not accept, even if they're progressives themselves, will not accept laziness.
Being put in that box.
Or they won't accept laziness in their subjects when they're trying to deflect in answers or spin answers. They have a certain level. If you're going to lie to me, you better at least make it good. Don't treat me like a jerk. Because if you do that, there are some reporters who will just slice the people up. And I think that's...
Well, that is the way the ring is set today. If you think about all these, like the CNN extremist reporters who try to get in fights with the president at a press conference because it elevates their careers, that has expanded the range of what's permissible for a reporter to engage in. And the questions are much tougher, it seems to me. They don't let them get away with as much fluff. Of course, there is the party difference that we alluded to. So you're saying that it's harder to skate 100%.
It's going to be hard for Kamala Harris to do it because she's going to have to decide, the campaign's going to have to decide who they want her to be. And she's going to have to play that role. And is she going to be woke Kamala or is she going to be law and order Kamala? And where that's calibrated could be the entire election now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But what if they just stay inside? You mentioned COVID and the fact that it keeps Joe locked in. They won't allow the locking down of Joe to appear to have been because he's an old man. They will appear in some sort of unified way that reflects a policy of the campaign regarding campaigning. And they'll both be out as much as and by whatever guidelines they decide the campaign's going to follow. So let's just go up a little higher altitude and say what happens here, predict the future a little bit. Do you have some sense of how this plays out. I have different days right now. I have days where I just can't believe that Joe Biden is somehow going to stand on a stage and do a debate with Donald Trump. And then other days I say, well, it's the liberal media that runs these debates, and they'll have it all formatted in such a way that they won't allow Trump to do follow-up questions or to press Joe on when he falls. You know, when Joe gets wobbled by a blow to the chin, they'll throw Trump out of the ring while Biden has a chance to recover, don't you think?
I think absolutely. I think that the baseline is now Candy Crowley. That is not – that's where they start.
Right,
They will certainly do that. But you make a good point on hiding, and I think that would be the strategy. The strategy would be a prevent defense until we get to November for the Democrats. But the problem is that Trump is improving in the polls. He's going out and he's doing stuff. He's getting things done. He is – leading, dare I say, and like we talked about earlier, the American psyche is now changing the way it sees these what's happening in the streets with these riots and large scale looting there's been great flight from the cities into the suburbs and into Cape Cod. Cape Cod's half of New York now, and there are real tangible changes that have happened since the George Floyd stuff, including crime rates, which have gone through the roof. And I think that now it's being more equated to Democrats. And that's all Trump is saying now, if he can just stay on message. He's saying Democrat-run cities, Democrat-backed protesters and rioters, Democrat-supported criminal activities. And the more that happens, the more people are saying, at least the polling is showing, the more people are saying, oh, okay, the guy in the White House might be a jerk, but things were a lot better last February than they are now. Not only was I allowed to leave my house without getting mugged or catching the disease, but the stock market was through the roof. And so even though last February people were saying, oh, I wish this could be 4 years ago when we didn't have all this heightened anxiety, now I think people have forgotten about that anxiety. They look at February as a good old days, and they say, just give me February back.
The good old days of just COVID.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre-COVID.
Exactly. When the stock market was...
When Trump was just running the country the way he was meant to run the country, before he got interfered with.
Yes, exactly. And even though, his Twitter was crazy, existentially, things were fantastic. Probably better than they'd ever been. Certainly...
The other part that supports what you're saying is that the left has become more rabid than Trump. And so the complaint about Trump really is that he makes you think about the presidency all the time, because he electrifies it. It's like this buzzing current all the time coming out of the White House. But they're worse now.
Oh, heck yes. Absolutely, I believe they're worse now. Certainly the media is worse now, and his political opposition is worse now. Nancy Pelosi could have passed a skinny bill. Skinnier relief for the phase of recovery for folks to bridge the gap. She could have. As a matter of fact, the Republican Steve Mnuchin went back to Trump several times and met her demands, and then she'd say, "Nah, I decided we want a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more." She's happy to drag this thing out to November without anybody getting a check in the mail of relief. She's happy to do it, and I mean, she plays for keeps. But I think people are seeing this now. It's harder for them to win these battles when people are...
Well,
really
that could be. I want to talk about the package. I want to talk about that when we continue. Stay with us. Tom Shattuck here from the Lowell Sun. Stay with us on WTIC. Tom Shattuck is here. We're talking national politics. So, okay, we've beat up on Kamala Harris and laid out what the problems for the Democrats are. But I'm concerned about the country and the idea that Republicans are in the mood to go along with the expansion of government spending, the expansion of deficit spending, the expansion of debt. I look at what's going on in Washington and the way the numbers are rolling, and I'm saying, if Trump isn't the guy who's determined enough to bring a a rational, reasonable, balanced budget approach to Washington, is it ever going to happen, Thomas?
Trump's not the guy to do that. He doesn't care. It's not his money. He doesn't care about balancing the budget. I think he doesn't us getting screwed. So he doesn't want the Chinese to beat us in trade piracy. And he doesn't like us paying dues to ungrateful Western European nations, you know, in NATO and other things like that. He doesn't like other countries getting one over on us, really. It's very Manhattan landlord of him. But I do like the idea of keeping the unemployment benefits with the supplemental $400 a week over the $600. I think that's politically smart. I think a lot of Americans need relief right now.
And especially with the $100 requirement from the states thrown in, the matching state contribution. Do you think that's going to survive? That part I like, because it puts them in the situation like Governor Lamont was running around, you know, on the one hand, all spending from Washington of money that does not exist is a moral responsibility. But then Governor Ned, his response is, whoa, I don't know what budget am I going to cut? I can't cut that. I can't cut this. Well, I can't cut that one. That's not going to happen. So there's a different reality for when they're looking to Washington for bucks.
Right. And it's the same in Massachusetts. And it just so happens that a lot of states that are crying poor are also states that imploded their economies, you know, during the outbreak, which also coincides with the states that now have the highest unemployment rate percentages due to the COVID. Like the top five or so are also the states that that had the highest fatality rate and that locked down the most. So Massachusetts, high fatality rate, high unemployment rate, locked down the most. New York had the same thing. I'm sure Connecticut's up there as well. And, you know,
Connecticut's a disaster on this count. And what that means is that they didn't care. They chose to say only the virus matters, destroy the economy any way we have to. And now they're paying the price. But ultimately, I think, Tom, we've only got a minute left, but ultimately I think that they think that Biden will win and he will give them all the money they need to erase this debt. And it'll look like glory days all over again. The Democrats have made everything beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it looked like glory days for the first couple of months before, you know, the bridges in Chicago have to permanently be up to create the moat to make sure that the criminals in caravans can't get through. Then at some point, Medicaid and Social Security are going to be insolvent. And we're going to have a problem. And if that happens on Biden's watch, well, then, you know, 2024 will be an interesting year. So I think the celebration will be short-lived under Biden-Harris.
Well, hopefully we don't have to learn that lesson, but we'll see what happens. Tom Shattuck, always great to talk with you. You are the guy who I imagine can't sleep at night because you're so excited by what's going on in politics.
You are right. I love joining every week. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you again soon. Tom Shattuck, Lowell Sun Newspaper Senior Editor there.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.